Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thunder Athletes, and welcome to the latest episode of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am your host, as always, Malt Jar. On this episode, we're talking about 2000 AD Regened. It's the first of the Regened issues this week out from 2000 AD. And we have some of the creators involved in this all-ages special issue. We've got Michael Carroll, Simon Colby, Luke Horsman, David Bailey, and Anna Morozova, who are going to be talking about, the first three are going to talk about Action Packed, which is a brand new series, and also Mayflies, which is another brand new series. And David and Anna are going to talk about their new series, which is Viva Forever. Not going to chat for too long before heading into talking to them. It's interesting to hear their ideas behind these strips and what they want to achieve, and whether there's more in the pipeline. If you haven't got the latest issue of 2000 AD, which is the Regened Special, then head along to 2000AD.com or download our app, which you can find in the Apple and Android stores. There's plenty on there, including the latest episode of Future Shock's Radio, which is out now. Now, we had Nat Tapley, who was on just before Christmas, talking about these podcast episodes, which are exclusively free to 2000 AD and magazine subscribers through the 2000 AD app. If you go along and log in with the same details that you used to get into the web shop, should recognize your subscriber details and allow you to listen to them for free. And plenty more of those to come, so look forward to hearing what you think of those. Let's talk about Regened with Michael, Cy, and Luke talking about Action Packed and Mayflies.
Great to have you all on. Luke and Cy, you are bound by a common thread, which is Mr. Carroll on Action Packed and Mayflies. Well, let's talk to you, Mike, to begin with. Debut of two new series. Give us like a potted praisey of what Action Packed and Mayflies are about.
Sure. Action Packed is basically it's kind of what the title implies. It's an action story. My original idea was to have a story that was just pure action from start to finish. Every single episode will be just nonstop body parts to the wall action. With like no chance to sit down and sit back and relax. I thought this would be entertaining. It's extremely hard to write and also quite boring to read a story that's just total action with no chance for the characters to catch up. But it was going to be, you know, like people hanging out on the underside of the landing carriage of a crashing space shuttle while at the same time they're shooting guys who are flying on the backs of robotic dinosaurs, this kind of thing. It was just going to be mad stuff. But I realized, that doesn't work. It works as a one-off idea, but it wouldn't work for a continued series. It would just be exhausting. And I don't have the imagination to write that many different action scenes and tie them all together in a vaguely cohesive way. So ultimately, I come up with the idea of I don't want to spoil the story too much, but obviously Luke knows what happens in it. The idea is that there's a team of mercenaries who get involved in various high stakes adventures for various reasons, and they're disparate people come from all different parts of the universe and different times as well. So do you remember, you young people won't remember a movie called Free Jack from way back in the early days, I think it was the 90s, where it was set in the future but people were being taken out of the past for reasons I can't remember, but Anthony Hopkins was in it and Emilio Estevez, and that's pretty much all I remember. But the idea is that people are taken out of past and forced to recruit be recruited into this this gang for, you know, assorted reasons. And it's not a story with a lot of depth, or width or height or length or breadth. Or it has only one dimension. It's just action. But I'm hoping that as the story continues, we'll be able to build on and add layers with the various different characters that are introduced. That's been tremendous fun to write. And as soon as I saw the artwork coming in from Luke, I went, oh, yeah, this is what we want. It's just a good, fun action story, because not every story has to be, you know, shall we say, ponderous or indeed a milestone in comics. Sometimes you just need to have fun. I hope that works, you know. And then Mayflies, of course, comes from a different aspect altogether, because Mayflies is an idea I pitched years ago to the Mighty One, but it wasn't quite right. It's set in a Rogue Trooper universe, and it has it's a bunch of brand new characters, all of whom are effectively teenagers, because they're clones, but they're taken out of their growth pods prematurely. I was on Facebook one night when I was actually in the middle of writing this, and I saw that Simon mentioned that he'd be interested in doing something for Regened storyline. So I went, I've been a fan of Simon's work since, I don't know, forever, 30 years or something like that. So I thought, this is my chance to get in and credibility by association, you know. So I contacted Simon and said, well, you know, I'm doing this, would you be interested? And he said yes, and that's what we have with Mayflies. It's a rogue, set in Rogue Trooper universe, so it is or should be canon to the Rogue Trooper storyline. It's a lot of fun. So it's a bunch of characters who are they're effectively teenagers in their physical being, but of course they're only a day or two old, and they've got all the training, or a lot of the training that they would need as GI troopers, implanted in their brains. So they wake up knowing how to fight, but they don't know who they are. They know their names, but they have no connection with the rest of reality. And that's that one. And it was a lot of fun to do. Other people can talk now. Did you warn these guys what I'm like?
No, I think it's best for people to find out for themselves, to be honest. Let's you know, we talk more expansively about the scripts. But Luke, I want to talk to you, because you are a freshly minted 2080 droid. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you came to be working? Because you're working full time now in comics, aren't you?
I have been for a number of years. It's probably around, it's near enough 10 years on and off coming to this point. Full-time comic artist now. But I used to just be a general illustrator coming from graphic design background, and just kind of built up to where I am today. And, it's mostly indie comics I work in for the most part. And then just kind of got in with the Mighty Tharg, and that was it, really. And here I am.
Because you've got one of those styles which, you know, from my point of view, looks perfect for Regened. You know, it's I don't want to call it cartoonish, because it's, you know, that tends to get thrown around as a pejorative. But you seem to handle action very well. Tell us a little bit about your reaction to the script when it came through.
It was apprehensive at first, because there was so much going on. But, you know, once you get, Michael writes such good action scenes, and it's just laser blasts and explosions everywhere. And it's just, I thought, I've just got to have fun with this and just make as much mess as I possibly can to make, well, in a coherent way. it's just have as much fun as possible.
Tell us a little bit about your style, because do you work fully digital?
I've worked fully digital now. I used to work traditional a few years ago. I tried to pack it in a little bit, because it's a little quicker and a lot less mess. And, you know, when you're meeting deadlines, it's better to go digital sometimes. You miss the tactile feeling of the mess in the inks, but it's all digital these days. It's a lot cleaner.
And in terms of this particular script, you know, what was your reaction to it?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was really fun. I mean, the characters are great. Mike creates some really good characters. And I just love every page of it, really. It's just, yeah, very fun to draw.
Simon may have his own perspective on this, but the mission statement that Mike mentioned about just having, you know, essentially being one long action sequence. What are the challenges of you know, keeping that fresh? I mean, I know you've only got a few pages to deal with on a strip like this, but you know, when everything's bombast, how do you stop it being a Michael Bay movie where there's too much going on?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it does. It's a struggle sometimes because you have to rein it in a lot of the time and keep the panels and the flow interesting. You know, you can't do. You could just draw explosions all the time to cover up needless, or you know, to add needless detail. But sometimes you have to rein it in a little bit. Make sure you keep the flow. So if there is explosions, it could lead the eye somewhere. Or, you know, try and be clever with it rather than just, yeah, there.
Because so, I mean, the first episode of Mayflies, isn't that much different in that respect? In that it's you know, no spoilers, but it's one long kind of action sequence. How do you approach things as somebody who's, you know, had many years of experience in the Rogue Trooper universe?
Well, this story, the main thing I want to do is introduce the characters, because clearly we haven't seen them before. So it was focusing on trying to get a nice clear shot of each character to, as far as possible in a few pages, establish their personalities and so on, as far as we can do that. And to establish this new take on the Rogue Trooper universe, I think, is the main thing I tried to do. But there's plenty of action in it. Yeah, it's not a quiet story.
Because, I mean, like I said, you've got form all the way back to working on the Friday incarnation.
Oh yeah,
of Rogue.
Yes, yeah.
which I used to copy incessantly.
They were great fun. They were great fun to do at the time. I enjoyed it enormously.
But are you're a very different artist now?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've changed my style over the years. Just try to focus more on storytelling rather than irrelevant detail, I think. That was the big change. It was actually at a convention. I bumped into somebody who mentioned they couldn't follow what I was doing in the story. And that was the best criticism I've ever had. I looked at my work and realised, yeah, I was putting in a lot of detail, but not doing the thing I should have been, which is telling the story. And so I stripped my work right back to things that functioned to follow the narrative. And I think that's where my work really changed. That was really helpful.
Because what I'd like about Mayflies is by having the same artist, it very clearly plugs into the same world as Jaeger, yeah, which you do with Gordon.
Gordon, yeah.
And are you worried about becoming I'll go to Rogue Trooper guy, or
that's not something to worry about. I'd be delighted. No, it's such a great universe. There's so many stories to tell. Yeah. As I was saying recently, I think there are a lot of elements sort of on the periphery of the Rogue Trooper universe that you could focus on rather than just Rogue beating up another squad of noughts. There are interesting perspectives you can take on that story. And I think that's what Gordon and I do in JJ and Mayflies as well.
Yeah, I particularly this episode, I noticed was there a little bit of Colin Wilson influence in your ship design?
He's always been a huge influence. I love his work. Yeah, possibly so. I've been a fan of his work since forever. And he had a nice sort of Mobius influence in his work, sort of Jean Girard kind of influence coming through, like European style. But yeah, I adore that work. It's fabulous stuff.
Yeah, Colin worked with Mobius on what's the cowboy strip called?
The Western Story, yeah.
Yeah, Blueberry.
Blueberry, that's all right, yeah.
Yeah, no, he did. I interviewed Colin last year, and yeah, absolute delight to chat with him. Mike, just on now that we're at publication date, as it were. When you're looking at strips for things like Regened, how much, how much longevity do you kind of automatically build into new ideas? Because, yeah. Because obviously, Reed Jean has already spun off, like Full Tilt Boogie, and there's been lots of clamour for follow-ups on some of the other strips. Nice. I wonder whether that's in the back of your mind when you're doing something like this.
Yeah, very much so. Well, I mean, I still believe that comics should be more aimed towards all ages readers rather than just the older readers. So to my mind, all of my stories can be aimed at that market. So I have that as my default setting, is that there is like the Regine model almost. And I have to force myself to write stuff aimed at older readers. And not that I can't do it, it's just that for me, that just feels more comfortable. So with Action Packed, for example, I mean, I knew it might only be one off. I don't know if there's going to be any more, but I just thought, Action Packed is designed, it could be a lot more episodic than Mayflies. Mayflies, if we go to a full series, hopefully will be story arcs over several episodes, maybe hundreds of episodes, hopefully. But Action Packed could be much more one episode per story, or story per episode. So much simpler stuff, and hopefully more accessible then to younger readers. But in a sense that of longevity, yeah, Action Packed is designed that I could wrap it up at pretty much any time if I had to. But alternatively, it could go on forever because of its nature. It'd be closer to Dread rather than, say, Jaeger, because Jaeger's got a presumably clearly defined arc. At least I imagine it has. That's what I've seen.
Yeah.
Whereas Dread stories, you can tell one-offs or, two-parters or 24-parters or whatever. Action Packed is a lot simpler, but it doesn't mean it's any less valid. I've had such a blast writing that. I think at one stage I was toying with the idea of tying Action Packed into the Proteus Vex storyline, but I really want to have Action Packed to have human characters, and Proteus Vex has no humans. It's not necessarily set in this galaxy, so I thought I would keep them separate. I'm not going to try and create my own the Mikeyverse. Copyright Mikey. I'm keeping that one. So yeah, with the stories, yeah, I do have a very definite plan for what I want to happen with Mayflies, but it's plans for these sort of things are kind of set out nebulously. You go, I know roughly where I want to get to, but I'm not going to chart the entire route because I want to see what the reactions are. And obviously, if we go to a series and if Simon's willing and able to draw it, and we let him, then we need to see what he wants to do, because he might not want to draw the same spaceships over and over. We might want to do something new and different. And the same with Action Packed, we have the advantage because we're using it'll go to different time zones or different regions. If Luke decided he wanted to do it on a planet full of pink marshmallows, we can do that. Actually, I'm writing that one down as well. They both have kind of longevity built in, but also a sell-by date. I know how I want Mayflies to actually end if we were to put an ending to it. So that's one of the most fun parts about writing a series like this, is that it is speculating on where it might go and planting seeds that may or may not germinate. Yeah, there's a lot of seeds that you don't know they're seeds until they germinate. Otherwise, they're just things that happen.
That whole reply must have been quite a roller coaster for Luke, as you kind of went from, yeah, it's a one-off, or, oh no, it could possibly be more.
Yeah. Well, we don't know yet. I haven't talked to the Mighty One about where to go on this, but I do want to carry on with both series if it's possible. Again, because Regine is only once every 3 months. Is it 3 months? I think so. Yeah, we don't know what the plans are yet. Well, I don't know. I mean, obviously Matt knows, because he knows everything. Him being all-knowing and all-seeing. Bless him.
Look, I mean, how much time as an artist do you put into a relatively short strip like this, particularly one that might go somewhere? Because I guess I've talked to people in the past who said, oh yeah, I wish I'd thought about such and such at the very beginning and saved myself some time.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of time, a fair amount of time goes into things like this, especially when they're a new pilot strip like that. But you've got to kind of put the effort in for that kind of. That's the kind of thing I spend a lot of time doing for that. But if it's a comic I've been working on for a while, you get into a flow and you don't have to. You can speed things up a little bit. So yeah, there's quite a lot of effort goes into something like that.
Because it almost feels slightly unfair. You've had to build it from scratch, whereas Si's been working in that universe for years now.
Yeah, well, it's not bad because I'm quite at home with coming up with characters on the fly. Well, anybody who works in comics will be, because they have to draw endless panels of endless characters, and you get into a rhythm of kind of, or a library bank in your head of characteristics you can just pull out of a bag, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but more or less it's relatively comfortable, fairly easy sometimes.
We'll make the next one hard for you.
Well, I'm interested in the fact that you moved over from graphic novels, graphic design. God, you say a phrase so often, it just that you moved over from graphic design, because there's a fair few comics people who have made a similar transition. I wonder what your thoughts are on the ease of doing that, and whether that allows you a certain you know things about production and
print and things like that.
Yeah, there is
an advantage because I came from a print background and a web background, so I had a lot of knowledge already. So generally, if I'm doing a book for private clients, I do all the all the colouring and the lettering and the preparing for print, and I can just shove it out the door and send it to print, and then they've got a book. So there is an advantage to coming from a graphic design background, and learning compositions as well that you wouldn't necessarily have if you're just starting fresh in comic books. Doing storyboards for animations and things helps greatly in creating sequential artwork, because it's basically the same. So yeah, it all helps.
Because it was really interesting chatting to Kevin Neal the other week, and his thoughts on how having been an art editor and essentially a graphic designer for so long influenced the way not just he put his art together, but the little details that he added and the way he saw the process. Because you're more from a generation of 2000 AD artists who kind of grew up in print,
I was going to say, I spent a year as a graphic designer when comics went quiet in the late 90s. Right. I worked for the NHS in Norwich in the hospital as their graphic designer. So, I mean, it's useful stuff to know in terms of print processing. As Luke was saying, how to prepare stuff for print and that kind of thing. So, yeah, and my degree is graphic design degree. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get you on the show for a longer, more in-depth chat. Because
yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, anytime.
That'd be super.
We haven't done till now. Why? What did he do? why do you hate him so much?
Oh, I've got a long list of people I want to chat to. It just takes a long time.
No, we'll do that sometime. That'd be great. I'd love to.
Brilliant. I did want to talk about your feelings on the whole Regenes project, because it is a something that a lot of people have a lot of very strong opinions on, both for and against. Yeah. Obviously there might be slight bias here because you're being employed to work on it. But I just wanted to get your feelings on Regenes as a project, as an outreach to,
sure,
not just, some people talk about it as kids comics, but it's not, it's all ages. It's meant to be across the board. And I also want to get your thoughts on how a strip can appeal to all ages, rather than saying it's for this group.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's an entirely valid thing to do, I think, to find new readers for the comic and for the stories we want to tell. That's absolutely valid. I mean, I wanted to do it because I fancied the artistic challenge of taking my work, which is very gritty usually and textured and violent, let's be honest, in J-Gear, and seeing if I could. I can't change my style. I've done it for too long. It would be ridiculous to try and do that. I would just write a pale imitation of somebody else's work. But I wanted to focus on elements of it that made my work presentable and hopefully appealing to readers of all ages. And so what I did was actually restricted the palette of the tools that I used. I dropped the kind of texturing that I used, the splatter and that kind of thing. And I just went for very clean lines and shadows. And again, as I was saying earlier, just tried to focus on telling the story as cleanly as possible. I used a little bit of, I'm very much a traditional artist. I like my brush and ink. I used a little bit of digital work, again, to try and clean up some of the lines here and there. A little bit of the feathering were done digitally, which I think perhaps gives it a slightly sharper, cleaner edge than my normal work. But we'll see whether readers notice that. I don't know whether it'll look different to readers or not. To me, I can see the differences between a page of Mayflies and a page of J-Gear. Whether readers will notice that, well, we'll find out sort of in the near future, I think. But no, I think it's a great project. It was very exciting. I was excited to do it. I found it very difficult because I was looking at virtually every line, every bit of texture, and debating, does this add anything to the story? And leaving things out is much harder than just adding extra texturing or shading or whatever. But I enjoyed it. I'm pleased with the work, and I hope people will enjoy what we did.
Yeah, well, I love the range of different art that's in Rejuned. I mean, 2008 has always been good for, you know, a good palette of artists. But this Rejuned in particular has got a real mixed bag. We're having Simon's work at the end of the current book is just a really good kind of solid story at the end, and then it kind of goes from really cartoony work, and it's just I just think it's a really good kind of fresh content for kids to kind of get into, so they can see different varied storytelling rather than just having like one style across the board.
Yeah, people can tend to think that, I mean, manga is, you know, enormously popular, but you can sort of end up chasing that a little bit too much and ending up with everything still actually looking a little bit samey, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So it, in terms of the stuff you've done before, not necessarily for 2000 AD, what kind of age ranges was that aimed at?
Well, it's generally, I'd probably say, 20s to 30s. Mm. I don't do a lot of kids' books. I did one, the book that kind of started the whole journey. I had a pet project to do a sci-fi kind of all ages book, and that was purely just cartoon work, so that, you know, that's probably the most cartoon work I did. That was a book called Eden Gate that I worked I must pick up because it was quite good. But generally it's quite, as the years have gone on, my work's got a bit grittier and a bit more textures. There's the things that the work that I did for Action Packed is a little more cartoony than I usually do. I think I working for Regine kind of makes me draw a little more cartoony, just to tailor it to the young, all ages. But the more recent books have been, you know, more young adult and probably my age, you know, up to 30s and 40s. So it changes. Hmm. It depends. But,
I do like this thing that the amount of texture raises the age on something, because you and Si have mentioned
it. You have to rein it in a little bit sometimes. I'm a big fan of splattering toothbrush ink everywhere, but there is a point where you can go a little too far. You have to get the white out. But yeah, I love the mess. I think that's the best part of it.
Because it's always that debate about what kids want, you know? And, yeah, and on an all-age book, it's going to be lots of pulled in lots of different directions. Mm. And, you know, you see people say, well, 2000 AD back in the 70s was this, and so therefore it should be this again. And kids these days are much more sophisticated readers.
Oh, yeah.
than they ever used to be, you know, because they will be picking up books that were not intended for kids, you know? I mean, a friend of mine has a 12-year-old who's just read his way through Akira and Dark Knight Returns.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, how his head hasn't exploded all over the wall, I've absolutely no idea. But yeah, it's that thing of you can't talk down to kids. You've got to give them something in the text rather than necessarily take anything out. I mean, I know you're both talking about cutting down on texture and making things a little simpler, but in terms of the strip, you kind of can't shortchange them. You can't say, well, that will do. That's for kids, really, isn't it? I mean, Mike, what's your take on it?
Well, I've been writing kids books for all my adult life, basically. So I'm familiar with it. I mean, the best way to find out what kids want to read is to ask them. And they will tell you all sorts of stuff. But in general, the best approach is not to assume that they won't understand something because it's complex. Kids have no problem understanding very complex things and coping with them and having, you know, all sorts of moral dilemmas. Characters don't have to be Darth Maul. Someone in one review said when The Phantom Menace came out, Darth Maul, he's got, you know, a red and black face and yellow teeth, and he's got horns on his head, and he dresses in a black cape, but he somehow left his I'm Evil t-shirt at home. You don't need characters to be so clearly defined. You can have characters who are ambiguous. And kids have no problem with that. The real problem with kids' comics and kids' books is the adults to think that the kids can't cope with various complicated characters or complicated storylines. So, for me, the main difference is no swearing and no sex. And that's also true in the stuff I write, you know? It's like you don't want to upset the people who are going to be buying the comics for the kids. The kids themselves can cope with any amount of exploding heads or monsters emerging from the depths or whatever. They love that sort of stuff. I mean, we grew up on that. Very, very few of us have turned out to be psychopaths or serial killers, to the best of our knowledge. But go back to the point of that, yeah, people look at 2000 from the 70s and go, well, that's what we should be doing now. I mean, no, because this isn't the 70s. And the kids who were around in the 70s are now us. I'm sure there were people in the 70s looking at 2008 going, this is wrong, we should be doing what we did in the 30s and 40s. And those people were the old guard against whom we fought. It's a true thing about all aspects of life that the rebels, if they live long enough, become the establishment against which the next generation rebels. We've seen that in every aspect of comics and every aspect of kids' fiction or anything like that. So our job is not to look back and say we should have done that, but look back and go, yeah, that worked then. What can we learn from that that will apply to the present day? And the present day kids are going to grow up reading Harry Potter and Star Wars and all that sort of stuff. They want stories that are high adventure, but then we always wanted that anyway. They want stories that are dark and mysterious and dangerous. And again, they always want that anyway. But what they really want more than anything else is stuff that they can feel is theirs. Stuff that they feel like they found by themselves. I was 11 just about when 2000 came out. So for me, it was made for me. And I still feel that about it. I mean, I still, here we are 44 years later, and I'm going, well, you know, kind of everybody else is wrong unless they agree with me, because only I know. But in reality, everybody who discovers it for themselves will find that. We don't want a new generation of readers who are told what to like. They want to stumble upon it and go, this is brilliant, have you seen this? Or have their friends tell them, but not adults tell them. That's the biggest dilemma in comics, is that how do you get a new generation of readers who feel that they have some sense of ownership of it, but not the sort of ownership that when they're in their 40s and 50s makes them think that they can destroy it, because that's what happens with Star Wars. You know, we don't want that level of toxicity, but we do want the that level of loyalty, I suppose.
I was going to say, I think kids today are exposed to probably much more media than we were at their age. I mean, they're probably better equipped to appreciate the subtleties and nuances of storytelling than we were. a lot of the stories we read were perhaps much more black and white goodies and baddies kind of stories. But the sheer abundance of material they can read now, I suspect they are better equipped to approach more complex narratives and characters, maybe.
Agree, yeah. Oh, yeah, that brings me to, when was that issue? I don't know, some very early product of 2008. One issue of Mac One, who, of course, was, you know, super-powered secret agent, and his boss was a complete cipher. We didn't know much about him, but he was the boss who assigned him missions. But then gradually we began to realize, hang on a minute, there's something going on here. And there was a backstory where the boss was basically an evil, evil man of suspect parentage. He was a nasty, nasty piece of work. This is Dennis Sharp. And I was a kid reading this going, oh, I've never seen anything like this, because in The $6 Million Man, for example, I don't know why I'm making that parallel, but in The $6 Million Man, Oscar, who was Steve Austin's boss, had a name and an office. He didn't have a background, a story, a wife. He didn't have kids. He had nothing. But then Dennis Sharp in Mac One turned out to be a bad guy with his own agenda. This was, to me, it was mind-blowing, because there had been nothing like that for me. But kids these days hopefully will have much more nuanced and complex stories that to learn from. The characters aren't always just clearly defined in their roles and sitting there never moving out of them. They can be bad guys as well. I like that.
We're from the time when $6 million got you a lot of bionics. Gets you nothing these days. Chump change. $6 million seemed like a lot of money at the time.
About the cost of an Apple Watch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, back in my day, it was 8 shillings, £4 and threepence or something. That was actually before my time. But it's stories were a lot. I mean, television, for example, actually, as Simon says, the media was very different. When we were growing up, every TV show was episodic. There was no, as my parents were calling, there was no foliar uppers apart from Doctor Who. Everything was, you didn't matter which episodes you saw in which order, it was fine. But nowadays, kids are used to episodic TV where stories have a resonance. If something happens, it has an impact down the road. It isn't like the reset button at the end of every episode of Star Trek Voyager. It's something happens and the characters have to live with that change. So I think stories tend to be, they are much better these days, partly because it's our generation who's writing them. The red generation before us didn't know what they were doing. Yeah. They did it for the money and for food stamps or green shield stamps or whatever it was.
Ration.
Super.
I thoroughly enjoyed this read, Gene. It's something that's really found its feet, I think, and particularly with Mayflies and Action Packed. It's nice to see new variations, not just on old 2000 AD properties, but kind of completely new things. Super. Well, thanks very much, guys.
Thank you very much.
Tell us a little bit about how the genesis of this strip, how this came about.
David. Hey, Anna, do you want to take that? Or
No, actually can elaborate on this, if you will, because me and David collaborated on the Black Museum story for the magazine. And, well, collaborated. I got the script of Matt and then I illustrated it. And then after it was submitted, I showed it to Dave. And I was like, you know what? I actually really enjoyed working on this. Do you have any more ideas? And we just started discussing it. Like, David was like, yeah, that's... he obviously kind of liked what he saw, I hope. So he said, I have a few ideas, so I might as well pitch them to Matt. And originally there was a slightly different pitch, but after David and Matt had some discussion about this is how Viva Forever came about.
Excellent. What was the different pitch? I've forgotten what that was it Viva Forever, but slightly different version?
No, it was like a different universe type of thing.
Totally different thing. Oh, cool. I'll have to check that out. my memory of the last 12 months is awful.
You know, it's interestingly, like when I saw the first idea, I really liked it. But then when I saw the second one, I was like, this is actually, I don't want to say better, but this is something that I can maybe do something a little bit more fun with, potentially.
You can you can absolutely say better. Just you're not going to hurt my feelings.
Because this one is a little bit more kind of actiony, because the first idea was a bit more like kind of stage and like a, it was slightly less motion. It was more like a kind of narration type of thing. Well, this one is like, you know, kind of jumps and oops and
cool.
Fights.
So. Well, Anna, you've done an absolutely incredible job on this story and the last one we worked on together.
Thank you so much.
I mean, there was a reason I emailed Matt immediately after seeing that first Black Museum. And I was like, what do you have Anna working on next?
Thank you.
Because I'd really like to work with her again. She's great. She's a very cool artist.
Thank you. Because I always, you know, I kind of want to do better every time. And every time I finish a job, I look at it and I'm like, I'm living with those panels in my head. I could have done better. But I'm, you know, like when people say they like, and especially the person who wrote the script, and especially people who worked on it after, you know, like colorists and letterers, and Matt is happy. So that makes me happy, essentially. So hopefully the audience and the readership will like it too. So
yeah, the end point in the whole production. Yeah, I hope they like it too. Yeah, I misremembered how it came together because I have a memory that Matt emailed me and asked me if I think he had the idea that it was gonna be a cat burglar story in Mega City One. I think it was him that suggested that. And I was like, brilliant. And you know, the usual thing that a writer does is you sit down and you have a million ideas, none of which fit. So you have to spend like 3 days corralling things into the shape that they need to be. And the whole time I had, every time I got something into place, in the back of my head, I was like, I could see how Anna might draw it. And I was like, wow, yes. But, you know, trying not to get too excited because, you know, a lot of the time you've got, is it a 10-page story? Is it 9 pages?
10 pages.
Mm-hmm. So every now and again, you write down all the ideas and then you break it, before you send it to Matt, what I usually do is I break it down into pages and make sure it's actually going to fit in the 10 pages. And always, it always ends up being like 15 pages, 17 pages. So, well, that's not going to work. Okay.
No.
Yeah, it's a constant iterative process of trying to keep my inner child in check and, you know, be professional rather than just 5-year-old me with a million ideas that aren't going to work.
Wait, tell us a little bit about just a bit more about the strip and the sort of premise behind it.
Well, Viva Forever. I worked on a character called Chopper a couple of years ago. And Chopper was forever. He was my favorite Judge Dredd universe character. He was just he showed up and he was immediately unique. And I've always wanted to come up with a character that has that same initial incredible impact. And when Matt had mentioned this idea of cat burglar in Mega City One, everything flowed into my head and I was like, wow. Someone who would target the billionaires of Mega City One and be completely impossible for them to protect themselves against. That's such a good 2020-2021 idea. I felt it was like really zeitgeisty in the same way that Chopper felt in whatever year Chopper was in 1987-88. And he was very of that time and progressed with the world of Dredd. As we've moved along with the world of Dredd, and I feel like this is our chance to do the same sort of thing, but with a new anti-hero character that can rub up against the judges and target, you know, the people that she really hates. In this case, is the billionaires of Mega City One.
No, I've spent the day not being on the right window to hit space so that I can speak. It's I kind of look away to make a note of something and then come back. I should just use a pen.
Don't worry. I've been on Zoom. I've been on Skype. I've been on... Okay, everyone, I press a button. That didn't do anything. Wait, what am I on now?
Just in your answer there, you mentioned about the judges. Now, there is one thing that is conspicuous by its absence in this first story, and that is... the judge, you know, the symbol of law enforcement in Mega City One. And I found that really interesting because certainly the vast majority of strips set in Dredd's world always feature the judges, either directly or indirectly. So we're always seeing the world through their eyes, really. It is the gaze of the judges. So to not have them even feature incidentally in a story seems like an intentional thing. Was that the case?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It was a very conscious thing. Because, like I said, when I first started putting together ideas, I had a list of 100 things that I wanted to happen, and I marshaled quite a lot of them into a folder that I called possible sequel ideas. And so all the judge stuff ended up there, and I really liked that because it gave this impression that these people, the billionaires that Viva Forever is targeting, they're above the law. They don't even consider the judges and that part of society. It's all beneath them.
I can probably pick up from here, actually, because there is in one of the panels, you can see Viva Forever walking kind of above the mega city one. And I, even though I drew it, you know, like referencing this classical mega city, you know, landscapes, a bit like the buildings, there's like a little bit on the detail you can see, it's kind of hinting that the judge's presence is there. It's kind of like this transport of the judges. But it's very mild and it's very like, kind of need to look for it a bit. So I, kind of kept it a little bit separate just now, just in case to see like if, because it wasn't like directly referenced in the script in the first instance. So for me, it would be a bit weird, you know, jump in and just like add like extra clues that weren't really part of the narrative, at least at this stage. But then again, the billionaire is surrounded by this heavy armored security people who are like a huge chunk of them are essentially the former judges. So yeah, it's like kind of, again, kind of showcases that the billionaire is above the law by the fact that he is able to, you know, hire this very strong force to protect and kind of stay at the top of the pyramid. So, yep.
We're kind of used to the idea that any judge who isn't a judge is on the long walk or is it on Titan, but actually you can walk away from the system and you would go into security just as thousands of police officers do these days.
And I quite like the idea that these billionaires have so much money that of course if they wanted 20 ex-judges, they could send a bunch of mercenaries out into the cursed earth and round up some judges and smuggle them back into the city, you know, feed them and de-ratify them. And they've got a personal protection force. Like I said, you know, these people, I want to set them up as really being above the law. And if we do get a chance to write a sequel, the judges come in. There's a subplot with the judges, but hopefully you still really get this impression that these people, they get it on, but not in the same way as the citizens. They don't think about the judges on a day-to-day basis the way that everyone, you know, below the 300th floor of the blocks do.
Yep.
So, are you drawing on like the long tradition of the kind of the cat burglar genre of character with Viva Forever? Is it? So, a character, a story that plays with the cliches of that kind of genre.
I tried to steer clear of anything that felt too much like a Catwoman story because I felt like that was the most obvious route to take with a female cat burglar in Mega City 1. I wrote down a bunch of stuff that did not want to happen. So I didn't want there to be, you know, like in the old Batman TV series, I didn't want there to be a massive jewel going on exhibition somewhere. And they're like, oh, I hope no one tries to steal this. And once you sort of eliminate all the things that you really want to avoid, you end up, you know, you sort of press it up against the window of Mega City 1 and you get quite a good idea of what you're going to end up, what the possibilities are. And without giving too much away, I felt like what we were going to try and do with this story is leave the reader guessing throughout. Without giving too much away, I wanted to concentrate on the narrative twist and the action that Anna was talking about earlier. You know, seeing Viva Forever do incredible physical feats and use incredible gadgets and technologies, and but keep the reader guessing all the way through, which I felt, I felt like that was steering clear of a lot of the stuff that we've seen cat burglars do, especially the way we intercut between the two main scenes in the story. So hopefully we've avoided all the cliches. Anna certainly has. Anna's designs are incredible. They're unlike anything you've seen in Mega City 1 before.
You see, like, from like kind of artistic perspective, I have an answer from like Michael's question as well here. Like, speaking of sort of like kind of this narrative clues or visual clues, right? I did put something into her overall presence, into her design, that kind of is meant to support the idea of who she really is and what her intentions are. And I thought it was pretty obvious, but so far I've not seen anybody guessing it. I essentially, like, David's original idea in the script for the character design's outfit was slightly different. It was a bit more kind of cyberpunk type of thing. But I decided to include something a little bit more organic. So I've given her this like hood type of thing, but it's not just the typical hood you wear. It's a hood with like kind of like flowy tail behind, which probably in the real world wouldn't really work because it'd probably get in the way. But let's assume that in this like sci-fi world of Mega City 1, it's like made of some material that bounces off like obstacles, so it doesn't get in the way. But essentially, like, I really kind of wanted this part of the costume to give a slight extra motion to the character, but also to emphasize this kind of visual clue, because it's the hood and we know this like very, you know, famous folklore character with a hood who essentially attacks the rich people and helps the poorer ones. So I hope that idea kind of worked, but we'll see what people say about it. I hope it makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, I guess in so few pages, I mean, it is the 2000 AD way, you know, you do have to cram a lot in. It's hyper-compressed storytelling. But especially when you're starting a new series and one that you don't necessarily know if it's going to have more installments, do you feel a greater pressure to get those elements right from the off, both in terms of script and art?
You know, like in terms of art, I don't know, there's always pressure to get it right, to get it visually right, to make it like visually appealing. But at the same time, you want to keep this energy in flow so the people can resonate with. You're meant to have fun, because as soon as like you let this over pressure through your art, it really does stiffen it up. And I'm speaking of from my experience, because I know that when I think like too much about this like overall responsibility, you know, like there is enough already in making the art look good. So to add on more and more and more, you get into this like very strange place where just like overcomplicate things, where really it needs to be very clear storytelling. So as long as you keep the story clear and flowing and going, that's the most important thing to me from like, if we're talking from like an artist's point of view. And then it's up to the readers to decide, to judge it essentially. So of course I'm like feeling pressured and worried, but I worry enough, so I let other people worry about it on my behalf when they read it.
Yeah, in terms of the script, I mean, it's kind of what you were saying yourself. You kind of boil it down to the essential core. So the stuff that, if we don't get to come back to Viva Forever, what's the stuff that I really wanted to say with this character that I, you know, I'd be really kicking myself if I didn't get the chance to get out there. But I felt like particularly in this case, that actually really worked, because what you ended up with, it was like boiling away all the extraneous stuff. And what you end up with, you know, Andy Diggle always says this, is a shot glass full of thrill power, he says. And it felt like when I was writing it, it felt like a shot glass full of thrill power, to quote an old Varg. And I felt like in this case, that was actually quite a nice process, taking off stuff that wasn't necessary for this particular story and saying, well, maybe that could be a sequel. Maybe that could just inform ideas for another sequel. So yeah, what we've got is the essential core introduction to Viva Forever as a character, and I feel like I feel like it's really worked. A comic succeeds or fails on the strength of the art a lot of the time. So I'm just very glad that, you know, I'm working with Anna on this, because I said on Twitter today I pretty much could have written anything, and if Anna and Pippa and Jim had worked on the story, it still would have been great. So it's a nice position to be in as a writer.
And obviously this is for 2080 Regened. I was chatting to Mike Carroll, Cy Colby and Luke Horsman for this episode. And we were chatting about the fact that this is all ages. So it's not your normal issue of 2080. And I wanted to get your both of your thoughts on whether this affects the way that you do things, whether in terms of, you know, ideas or the finished work, and how you see Regened as a project, as a mission, you know, whether you think it Viva kind of, you know, fits into that, as it were.
I can take this one to start with. I'm a huge fan of the Regened project, and I think one of the best things about it is that it's all in continuity, especially the Dread stuff. It's in continuity. It's not. But has there been anything that's out of continuity in the Cadet Dread stuff? I think it's all stuff I think it all, you know, matters in the sense that comic book fans talk about stories mattering and not mattering. Did it happen? Did it really happen? And I feel like that's the best thing about Regened, that no one's being missold. Regular readers can pick it up, and it's a regular 2000 AD. It's just a slightly different angle, and it's not even, none of the Regened projects have particularly been written for kids in particular. It's just there's a slightly different skew on a lot of the material. My favorite Regened story was the young Johnny Alpha. It was Alec Worley and Ben Wilshire, and it's brilliant. It's a perfect three-act structure story with a Chekhov's gun, and it's drawn in a nice open style. It's perfect. And there's no one of any age that would, you know, throw it to the side because they think it's for a younger audience. It was just great. And I felt like every time I've done something for the Regened project, so I did a Gronk story last year with Rob Davis, and I had the same idea then, just a slightly different angle on the material than I would write for a regular 2000 AD issue. And it's not that I'm writing for anyone younger, and the art isn't drawn for a younger audience. It's just there's something about it that makes it more accessible to everyone. And I feel like as a project, Regened project's been a great idea, and I think it's been a great success.
I really like how Mike once said that one of the greatest things about 2000 AD procs is that they're constantly reinventing themselves. So it's constantly something new, either with like every proc or with like every kind of story run. So one thing that really, really appeals to me as a reader and as a, you know, like an illustrator, is that I have this amazing variety of like very, very talented people, you know, fantastic writers and fantastic visual artists. There's something for pretty much, you know, like every taste, essentially, for every person. And Regened, I think, is very much in the same narrative, is in the same continuity, you know, it's just slightly different angle on things, as David is saying. I don't necessarily think that it's like simplifying anything for the reader, far from it. It's just like a nice platform to try new things and test new things. And so I think like as soon as you start, again, as we were talking about overthinking, as soon as you start adding this pressure and like trying to create something that should appeal to this target audience, like it's important to consider the target audience, but the pressure always comes through. It's visible if we're talking about creative stuff, if we're talking about writing, if we're talking about like art, people can sense it, people can be fooled. They do notice those things. And kids and teenagers, you know, younger people especially, So, you know, it's interesting because I worked on like some educational projects as well. I did some illustrations and they were very like kind of, I would say, they weren't any different from what I do normally. And the feedback I got from schools is that kids absolutely loved them because they were very much kind of the content you would get for like more grown-up audience. So yeah, I think just Regent is just this really, really nice platform. Really, it's very good space to give voice to something new and see how people react to this, really.
Yeah, as a younger reader, when I was, I suppose I was like 12 or 13 when I started reading 2000 AD. And my favorite issues were always the jumping on frogs, where you had like a whole bunch of new stories, and you just didn't have any idea what was going to be in them. You'd seen like the little previews on the inside cover, and that was it. And I feel like Regine is a nice regular opportunity to have that jumping on frog. For everyone, so you know, readers can show it to their kids, they could show it to the neighbors, they could buy 100 copies and leave them around bus stops. That would be weird, but yeah, it's like an extra special jumping on frog. And you know, and if someone buys it and they don't dig it, they don't need to buy the next one because all the stories are one and done. I think it's been a brilliant idea.
And in terms of Viva Forever, do you have an eye on the future? You know, if Tharg goes, oh, actually that worked, I'd like a bit more. Do you have ideas of what you'd like to do with her story?
I think I've mentioned that I've got a file full of stuff that didn't make it into this story. Myself and Anna have been chatting about it, and I've been trying to boil that down now into ideas for a possible sequel. And I've already got another file of stuff that isn't fitting into that story. So I don't think the question is, do we have ideas for a sequel? Do we have ideas for a third series or a fourth series? And I think the answer to that is yeah.
It's interesting because I was thinking about it as well. I was like, I actually, believe it or not, I only got my subscribers copy today. They're usually very late. So I did see some preview images, you know, so I did know like how amazing like the work was done, you know, like by Pippa Bolan and Jim Campbell. It's great. But finally I saw it in print and I immediately thought like, oh, that would be great. Like I should suggest this and this to Dave. And then I recall that he's already got like a huge pile of ideas and I was like, I better not overcomplicate it.
You know? No, please, please, please send more ideas. The great thing about having too many ideas is that, you've got more stuff. The worst thing is when you have just enough ideas to fill the pages. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I wish I had something better for page six. So when you're spending a lot of time boiling it down and trying to decide between two or three things that you really like, that's the best situation to be in. I don't have my prog yet because the postman usually asks to see it when it gets delivered. So he was asking me today. He's like, don't you have something in 2000 AD this week? I'm like, yeah. Where is it? keep your eyes open.
It's interesting, like sometimes they come in on time, but every time there is something I did for the prop, it's always late. But, and especially, you know, like lately with the snow issues and like postal delays, yeah. It's been very slow. And I like one day I just got like a few progs and a magazine all together.
there's someone in Northern Ireland, there's a subscriber in Northern Ireland who's got the same name as me. And every now and again, he gets my comp. And he like sends me a message on Facebook that I see like 9 months later. There's nothing I can do. Enjoy your extra issues.
Super. Well, thanks very much to David and to Anna and again to Mike and to Luke and to Si for chatting away about Regine, which is out now. If you've not picked up the collected edition of previous Regine stories, which came out in January, then it's available from 2000AD's webshop and apps, as well as all good book retailers. We'll see you in 7 days' time, Earthlets. We're going to be talking to some of the people behind the Penguin audiobooks, which should be out by the time this episode rolls around. So yeah, looking forward to that and kind of delving into how you adapt a comic book into an audiobook. So yeah, until then, Earthlets, please continue to take care of yourselves and others, and we shall see you in 7 days' time. Splendid Vothric.
Alert! 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 Fill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagents now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com.